It's time for Heat Wave Sports. Sit back and relax as you take a tour around the world of sports each and every Saturday and Sunday night. And now, your hosts for Heat Wave Sports, Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
And welcome on into a super Sunday night edition of Heatwave Sports. Tim Unglesby, Damon Cotton with you from the Lotus Broadcast Studios. A big three-hour edition of Heatwave Sports. And yes, we'll talk about NFL week number 9. What you just saw, the Baltimore Ravens laying claim to the best team in the AFC as of right now with an impressive home victory over the New England Patriots, a previously unbeaten New England Patriots, 37-20 tonight. Lamar Jackson, 3 touchdowns. We'll talk about that later, as well as the rest of Week 9 in the National Football League. We have a special guest joining us right off the top tonight, and hopefully he'll stay with me for a while tonight. I don't even know how to introduce this gentleman. I'm going to let him give his bio, because it's a very lengthy one. But if you remember correctly, we had this wonderful gentleman on when his book came out about Bryce Harper and his one season over at CCSN. Rob Misch, always a pleasure to have you back in the studio with us.
Great to be back. It's been too long, Tim.
It's been long, but you've been busy. Yeah. Been a very busy guy.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Just for people listening, you know, I'll just tell you this, and I know I told you this the last time you're on. I knew you from when you wrote at the Las Vegas Sun, mm-hmm. back when it was really, at that time, it was head-to-head with RJ, I believe, and I've always thought that your guys' sports content was way better than review journals at the time. You had some great writers that have gone on to do many, many other things. But that's where I know you from. But yeah. I also know you have a background from San Diego, writing there at the Gazette, and much more.
Well, I went to San Diego State, and actually my final year at San Diego State, way too long ago. I got out of there in 87. I wrote for 1 year for the San Diego section of the LA Times. And got out, toiled around the Pomona area, Ontario, for 3 years, lower level papers, kind of learning the ropes, a lot of high school stuff. And then I got probably the gig that kind of set me off was August 1990. I got the job covering UCLA football and basketball for the Pasadena Star News. That lasted till 98. I covered national college hoops, and I was the Southwest columnist for CBS Sportsline for 3 years. And came here in October 02 to write for the Las Vegas Sun. So that lasted 7 years, December 1, 09. I can't believe we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of the bloodiest round of layoffs I have ever heard of, first of all, in the business, much less been a part of. I'd been laid off before, and once you're laid off, you learn the golden rule. It's not the end of the world. Something good, if not better, around the corner. Just be patient. So when that happened in 09, wasn't the end of the world. And 30 days later, I was onto the project of my life, because I had known Tim Chambers. When I first moved here, Tim, I noticed that odd junior college on the outskirts of town, down there on the outskirts of Henderson, that hit with a wooden bat. Now, if you know anything about college or junior college baseball, wooden bat is very unusual. So right. I stuck my nose in there and just found out it was a gym, met Tim. Whenever I could, if I had free time, I would go down there and do features on his kids, cover games on my time, just because it was so unusual. And, of course, he turned out to be such an unusual person. You talk about a one-off. Mm-hmm. That mold was broken when whatever greater being concocted his mold. So sad week in Las Vegas for sure, since he passed away exactly 1 week ago.
Yeah, we'll get your thoughts on Tim Chambers a little later on. Maybe some stories you can tell, because that, like you said, that book kind of catapulted you for me into the next.
It really did. Another level, Tim. And, you know, I was on another show earlier in the week saying this exact same thing, that if it wasn't for him, I don't write four books in this decade. So it started off with him doing the Harper book, as I said, during that 30 days after I got laid off, December 1, 09. We just, one thing led to another, and I gave him the germ of an idea to cover that team every day. He knew it was going to be a one-off, and I said, well, if it's going to be such a one-off, should every day be chronicled? And he said, it's all yours. You're in the dugout for games. You're on the coach for road trips. And I think he it's like he knew. He knew he was vaulting me to the next step of my career, a better level, something much more challenging. Every writer who writes sports, I think anybody in the Fourth Estate has a yearning to write a book. And for this to come true, for that to happen, and to lead it to really to my career for this decade. And like just yesterday we were talking, I had a book signing for my sports betting book. It's my fourth this decade, and I owe all of that to Tim Chambers.
Wow. So before we get Tommy on the line, and we can talk about the new book. When you look at Bryce over the last, well, you look at his career, how he made his debut, was at Dodger Stadium, I believe, or was his first road trip out that way.
Yeah.
And now you look at him after the big free agent summer, and then this year, of course, he goes elsewhere, and the team that he leaves ends up winning the World Series. Do you still see that kid that you covered, or is he totally a different person in your mind? I know money changes a lot of things, but...
Yeah, it sure does. But that was always the end game with him. You know, the whole reason that he and his family decided that he would leave Las Vegas High School after his sophomore year and play at this junior college to prove he was worthy of being on the cover of Sports Illustrated just a few months earlier at the age of 16. This all was set up. It was all a grand plan. He did that so that he would not be drafted with his senior class. He did it to be drafted after what was technically his junior year of high school, but that was his first year of junior college. Mm-hmm. So you can get drafted that way. And they did that. If you might remember, Tim, in real time, back in that day, they were talking about slotted draft picks getting X money. And your bonus was going to be X. It was all going to be very rigid. And he did that to get drafted a year ahead of his senior class, technically as a junior, so that he wouldn't be pigeonholed into a salary, into a bonus. And he hit it big. It was his initial contract, I think, was more than $10 million. And it was all designed to get him in that pool to get the 8 years off his, you know, his deal, to become an unrestricted free agent 8 years after he was drafted. So all of that, the grand design, was being an unrestricted free agent after his eighth pro year. And that's what we saw after last season, and that's why we saw all the offseason shenanigans with bidders and crazy money, and he hit the lottery as the whole plan was designed. Now, you know, life doesn't go that way. There's always hiccups. There's always speed bumps. And for that to go exactly as they planned, that's a pretty big deal. A big part of me wants to clap and kudos for his family and good kudos for him. Everybody would want to be in that position. He hit the big time. He hit the lottery. He is fine for the rest of his life. The next generations of that family are going to be fine. So the fact that the Nationals won it all without him, I've been hearing a lot of from friends and even relatives the past 10 days. What's he think? Is he bummed? Oh, is he even watching these games? I got to imagine Bryce Harper's pretty happy. He's probably texting his buddies on that team that are still friends with him. He's probably, you know, if he feels bad for a minute, he probably looks at his bank account and feels really good, because their whole plan was about dollars, you know, little dollar signs in his pupils. It was always about money. When he was in, I think, grade school, I heard stories about him putting off people who we just met telling them, ah, you know how much money I'm going to make? I'm a baseball player. That arrogance a lot of people in Vegas are very familiar with. And so that carries with him. It's going to stick with him probably for his whole career. You can say his name in certain circles and you're just going to get a shrug and, you know, a frown. And people think a certain way about him. And it's not just a few people. So people are entitled to think what they want. He hit the lottery and he's got a newborn. So his family has started. He's on the way. He's probably feeling very good about himself. I heard he was at the vigil last Wednesday over at CSN, and it was told to me that he was kind of lurking in the back, and he was looking disheveled. And it was also translated to me in the very next moment that, well, he's got a newborn, so he's got a reason to be very, very tired these days. So, yeah, I heard about 100 people, 100 former players were out there at CSN last Wednesday, and there was a good amount of levity. Tim Chambers was a very funny guy. He had a quick wit, and a lot of those tales were told. So I heard it was a fitting send-off.
Let's bring in my co-host from TomBartonSports.com and the Sports Garden Network, Mr. Tom Barton. Tommy, you're here. You're out with us. It's Tim and Rob Mish.
Hey, guys. How are you tonight?
Hey, Tom.
Tommy, we were just discussing while we were getting you on the air, the Nats winning and the Bryce Harper connection, since, you know, we had Rob on initially when that book came out for Bryce Harper's one season here in Las Vegas at CSN.
Are you trying to say we had Rob on before? Is that where you're getting at?
I didn't say that directly, but, you know.
But I can say it.
So Rob, you moved on. You had a book that came out on Tuesday that Tom's actually in the book, so I wanted to let you guys kind of chop this up and tell us about what's going on with this new one, because it's a world that you said you jumped both feet clearly into the world of gambling.
Yeah, it was the middle of the summer of 2018 when I first got word through a channel of people, a series of people, and it came to me right on my lap. This publisher in New York, Kensington, was looking to put out a sports betting book. And it was just that vague. I didn't have any other details, no other charges, just, hey, we want to do this, and what do you think? I said, well, you don't have any particulars? You don't have any certain way you want me to go? They didn't. So it was up to me, and I thought that was pretty cool. I was able to lay out my own blueprint. I made some calls. I took a look at what was out there, and there was a few titles out there, a lot of cliche stuff, a lot of trite stuff, outdated stuff. There's, I don't even think it's sports betting. What's that series of books, Tim?
Dummies?
Yes. It's not sports betting for dummies, but I think it's betting for dummies. There's a chapter on sports betting in there, and it's pretty weak. Doesn't really get into a lot of depth, doesn't tell you a whole lot. So I had this blank slate, and I thought, boy, what would be the most interesting thing to do? And I just came up with the plan I'd lived here 16 years when I signed the contract. And so I told them, why don't I I've met some smart people on both sides of the counter since I've lived here. Jay Cornegay at the Westgate Superbook. I know Lem Banker, the legendary gambler. Some other people, I can probably get in and talk to Michael Gaughan at South Point. I know Jimmy Vaccaro and Vinny Maliulo down at South Point. I said, I have a good place to start with a roster of people, and I bet they can lead me to other people. And I said, let me go for it. Let me try to tell this tale, not in a how-to thing that's going to bog people down with numbers or algorithms or quants or headaches. Let me tell these people stories about sports betting on both sides of the counter, how they've lived it, how they've breathed it, what's worked, what hasn't worked, and let me just see what I find. And I'll go as deep as I can. And they said, do it. And I think Tom Barton was probably one of the first or second people I talked to.
Tim, I got to tell you, man, I don't know, you know, how much of the book that you read. I got an advanced copy. I read it. I didn't need an advanced copy. I could have got it yesterday. I read it absolutely cover to cover, and I didn't read it looking for me. I thought I would have maybe a blurb in there. I read it because it was just interesting. You know, one of the things that I've spoken to Rob about in the past is just the world that outside of Las Vegas, people don't realize. You know, there's a great line in the movie Casino, and I'm paraphrasing here, where he said, you know, they'd be back home, they'd be kind of throwing me in jail for stuff I'm doing here. Here I'm being treated like a king. Well, when I walk around and I tell people what I do for a living, and I've been all over the world, everywhere, doing this, I tell people, you know, I'm a sports bettor. I'm a professional handicapper, professional bettor. The eyebrow frowns, the weird looks that I get. I started coming to Vegas. I said that in Vegas. What did I get, Tim? Oh, Mr. Martin, no problem. How are you? Oh, you don't have to explain it. I don't have to go further with it.
Yep.
I don't have to then kind of tell them I'm not a bookie. Everybody sort of knew, and it's a different world outside. And I love the fact that Rob said, you know, these are real people. It's not, this isn't, you know, hey, check out this. This is real people doing this every day. This is how they live their life and come into the world of that. That's the coolest part about the book.
Yeah, it was really revealing, Tom, on many areas. You were fantastic. The story you told me about you being in Cary, North Carolina, and you were walking into a market. You had been led to believe you were getting into something that you didn't think you were getting into. It was a boiler room operation, and you were really led astray. You were really, really left out on a limb by some SOBs. So there you are in a market. You're walking in. You don't have a lot of money. You check how much money you have, and you only have enough money to either get puppy chow for your new dog or milk for yourself. And what did you pick?
Yeah, it wasn't for me.
Right. That little puppy had a full belly that night.
You know, it's so absolutely ironic, and I don't want to take the show on a bad turn here, but it's so ironic that you said that. I wrote Tim. That was a little less than 10 years ago.
Wow.
My dog, Bogey, died this morning in my arms.
Oh, my God.
Suddenly. Oh. And I knew I was going to be on with you today, and I knew that part was in the book, and there's a there's still a special feeling, you know what I mean, about that, and it's so funny that you brought that up first. And
yeah.
That was the epitome of the lowest point that I was at. And what am I going to do? And it kind of changed my life around. And I remember, you know what I mean, looking at him and talking about it now, almost 10 years later,
after
you wrote in the book, it really has come full circle for me.
Wow. I can only tell you that was one lucky pup for 10 years, because I bet you treated him like a king that he was.
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, and everybody I talked to, Tom, I think the last couple days, knowing I was coming on this show, I kind of in my mind, I ran through the roster of everybody I talked to, and then I thought, okay, with each person, what was the one thing that stood out that was really kind of amazing or insightful? And I remember that story you told me, and so that's the reason I brought it up. We haven't talked, and that just
no.
It really
that's just crazy, right?
It puts it in perspective, and really, 10 years. Look how far you've come in 10 years, and look what I've done in 10 years. But you have busted your rear, and you've really made a name for yourself, and you really belonged in the book.
Oh, thank you, Rob. And you know, in the book, tell everybody else. You know, because I know when we talk about you know, the players in here. Everybody thinks about the casino hosts, the casino managers, the sportsbook writers. You have those guys in there, and they absolutely belong. But you went deeper. And what I love is, even in just conversations about the book, you telling me stories about the characters. And you're not going down the road of characters that they're portraying, that, you know, Barstool Sports wants to portray guys with big gold chains and open sweats. But you have a great story about some of the characters in the book, and that's the stuff that I like.
Yeah, that's what I stressed to my editor at the publishing house, is I just wanted this to be personable. I wanted real stories from real people that everybody can kind of relate to, and I think many people out there, Tom, can relate to having a puppy and kind of putting that above other things and other items. And I mean, it doesn't get any more raw than that, than your scene in Cary, North Carolina. And I kind of tried to get to the heart and soul of what made a lot of these people do what they do, and kind of what made the heartbeat.
But Rob, and I'll let Tim jump back in here. Sorry, Tim. But Rob, isn't it just such a difference, though, when you hear the jerks out there, the touts there say, I'm hitting 90%. I stay up Saturday nights until 5 a.m. popping bottles. You know, really? Because I stay up 5 a.m. crunching numbers.
Right.
Getting weather patterns. And, you know, there's such a difference between what the pro handicapper really is and what, you know, I guess we could say Hollywood sort of imagines them to be. And the greatness, I love the fact that you just don't have those shiny 90% winner, greatest play, dog play of the millennial kind of guys in the book, and I really appreciate that.
It was a real big deal for me to not have any BS in there. And we could name names here, but that's not the point. There's a lot of BS out there.
I was going to roll off the list. No.
I told someone last week, I don't know which show I was doing, but I gave them my three rules of going in a sports book. Number one, don't ever put money down on the counter you're going to miss. Number two, when you walk into that book, you better be wearing waders because the BS is going to be thigh high, maybe waist high. You're going to hear it all, and that industry is just so full of it. There's, my God, it's pretty dirty, which comes to leads right to point number three, Tom. I have learned in a sports book never, ever to shake anybody's hand. I won't even exchange fist bumps with anybody because over the last few years, I've taken a very unofficial tally in the restroom when I'm washing my hands of other people, the percentage of other people who just kind of do their business and walk straight out without washing their hands. It is anywhere from 2/3 to 3/4 people who do not wash their hands in the gents. That might seem kind of a little too raw for some people, but that's the truth. And Tom, in the book, I wanted nothing but the truth.
Robert, you know, when you wrote this book, I asked you off air, I figured that people would want to be involved in putting the sports gaming aspect out in the real world. But, and you don't have to name names, but you said that it really wasn't that easy to get people to want to help contribute to your book.
It was kind of a double-edged sword, Tim. There were some people who really were pretty eager to be in it. And if you were that eager, we didn't really want you to be in it. If you called me, I probably wasn't going to return that call. And then by the same token, there was some people who I thought their voice would be really important. And for whatever reason, maybe their higher-ups didn't want them in it. Maybe they didn't want their property in it. But there was a good amount of people who did not want to participate, and that's okay, because my whole thing was getting a roster of maybe 30, 35 people, and if I could get 25 of them in, that would be really good, and I got 25, 26 really good people, really smart, really insightful. They kind of live you through it in real time, what they go through, and in that category or in that vein, someone who I think is really important to the book was Kelly Stewart. The female voice is so, so rare in this town, in that business. It's such a brutal business and very chauvinistic. It's a chauvinistic industry in a very chauvinistic city. To get her down in that book, to get her life story in there, how she navigates it, and then that allowed me entree into females in this city, and it's a very small portion of women who can excel in this city, and there are reasons for that, and they're not good. Mm-hmm. So I was real happy to kind of open the curtains to that. And she's real smart. If I have $100 and I want to give it to someone to maybe turn it over and make double it tonight on some game, if I'm blindly going to give it to someone, she's on the very small roster of people I want to give that $100 to, and hey, you turn that over for me.
So you got more traction with people on our side of the counter, per se? Or was it behind the scenes that gave you...
Well, it's a really good cross-section, I think. two guys who write about sports betting regularly for the competing newspapers at the Sun and the RJ. I got Todd Dewey of the RJ. I got Case Kiefer of the Sun. They have fantastic stories. Case's story about his generational ties to thoroughbred racing and greyhound racing are something that I stumbled on that was just so rich. There's a famous greyhound way back in the day in the South called Kiefer, his last name, and it has to do with his pop's ties to a certain track in the South. He would always promote this great greyhound, and the breeder of that great dog was so appreciative to his dad for giving him this PR and promoting it that he vowed, hey, when that dog has pups, I'm naming one after you. He named this dog after Case's father, Kiefer. And that dog, Kiefer, went on to be a fantastic greyhound. I think he either is in the Hall of Fame or he had Dog of the Year award 1 year. But this certain dog in Case Kiefer's family's lore is just beyond anything I could ever make up. Todd Dewey had a great quote to me. He said that he thinks he's a lot like just the average bettor out there, you, me, and the average Joe who walks into a sports book. What we want to do is turn a little money into a lot. Therefore, parlays are not exactly going to be out of our realm. That's going to be something we're going to look at to try to beat the man, turn 20 into 72, turn 100 into 360, whatever have you, whatever you can afford. That's why parlays to the average person looks like a pretty good deal. You want to make a lot out of a little. But
No.
I know. I knew you'd say something, Tom. When the guy on the other side of the counter sees you bet a parlay, oh my God, come on, come on. Everybody bet. The house's hold for parlays is north of 40%, which makes it 10 times richer than the average person going in there and just making a single bet. So the house can plan on making probably around 4 to 6% a year, maybe 5%, but the hold on parlays is north of 40% for a very good reason, huh, Tom?
I have yelled at Tim and Ron when we had him on here. Bro, they love parlays and they love teasers. And yep. I said, guys, this is a percentage game. You know, I did it on my own. I looked at it. Forget about all the stats that are out there. I did it on my own and I followed, you know, what parlays I would have done for a full year.
Yeah.
And literally, we're talking about north of 70% of the time, I would have won two of the three.
Yeah.
And two of the three would have made money. Yep. Instead, in a parlay situation, you're losing. Oh, I can't. Tell Tim not to do them.
But see, Tom, in that respect, going so deep into the business here, that really opened my eyes to it. I saw the percentages in such a different way, such a stark way. I now keep records that I never thought I'd keep. And that's just to track the business. Now, I'm not necessarily going out and betting these plays every day with a big bankroll and 1% being my unit and really trying to make a business of this. That's not my intention. I just want to know what the real professional, how they're going about it. And so I keep some really detailed numbers. And Tom, you are so right. It is exhausting. And I'm not even doing this for my financial benefit. I just want to know a little bit of what the professional is out there, how he operates and what he's doing. And my God, Tom, if you don't put in the log work, if you don't put in the time, oh, you are behind the eight ball and you're already losing money.
Nope. I guess we're going to take our first time out of the evening here on Heatwave Sports. We come back. Rob Misch still with us. We're going to talk about this wonderful, wonderful book he's had, and I want Rob to talk a little bit about the timetable he was given to produce this manuscript. You'd be surprised, you know, how long it takes to write a book versus what Rob had to do. We'll break that down for you. Still to come, rest of the show, week 9 of the NFL, and I want to talk a little UNLV with Rob a little bit later on as well, but basketball and football, as the basketball slate is scheduled to start Tuesday over at the Thomas and Mack. It's Heatwave Sports on a Sunday night, Box Sports Radio.
Be a part of the show, 876 877- 1340 or text Fox to 69187 and your message. This is Heatwave Sports on Fox Sports 1340.
And we're back, Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio, Super Sunday Night Edition. Tim Unglesby, Tom Barton, Damon Cotton, and our guest tonight, Rob Misch, local author. And Rob, the new book?
Sports Betting for Winners.
Available Amazon.
You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble online. And I'm pretty sure both Barnes & Nobles in town, in Summerlin and Henderson, are pretty well stocked of it. So you can go to the Henderson one and get a signed copy. I signed a bunch of them after my event yesterday. And I think this week when I can come up for air, I'll head up to the Summerlin one, see what they're stocked with, and probably sign some for them.
So take us through the journey here. You said to me that your shortest time of writing a book was 11 months.
Yep.
Talk about how this came together, and it wasn't 11 months.
No, it sure wasn't. Like I said, I first spoke with them in the middle of the summer of 2018. And so that's when I first got wind of it. Like I said, a series of people led to me and a great agent in Del Mar. He knew the people in New York, and so we started discussing it. And it took 2 months to negotiate to finally come to terms, which I did on September 1st. And I finagled a deadline of January 2nd, knowing I was going to get it to him the morning of January 1st. So that is exactly 4 months from going from nothing to finished manuscript. And that's absolutely, I remember the day I signed the contract, and I just thought, that's just asinine. That's just crazy. I had, like you said, I'd never written a manuscript in less than 11 months, from nothing to finished manuscript. So to cut that, to take almost 2/3 out of that process, I thought, oh boy, the money's important, I think, like I told you, but also I told you that I think a big reason I signed it was just to see if I could do it. Mm-hmm. And it made my process just so lean and mean. I used to go through this rigmarole. Like, if I interviewed you for a book, we would probably talk for at least 2 hours. I'd go home, I would transcribe it, and then I would print the transcription from the computer. It would probably be about 20 pages. I would create a Tim Unglesby file. That transcript goes in the file. On top of the transcript goes a legal pad where I outline every paragraph from the transcript, and on the legal pad I can look at A, B, C, D, and I can know on one sheet what you said in which paragraph to go for what. I know exactly what's where. That file becomes a part of a bunch of files for the book. That whole process I just explained to you, with hard copy, with paper, with transcripts, none of that exists in my process anymore. I couldn't afford to take the time to even print a transcript and to detail it like I did. It was all on Microsoft Word files, and I was just running on a fast-moving treadmill. So it made me so much leaner. I don't deal with any paper now. It's all just running on the computer and hoping it doesn't break down.
Why was there such a limited amount of time? Why did they only give you that small window to do this?
They wanted to get this out to market as fast as possible. And when you sign with a New York publishing house, you fall into their queue. Well, they've got other authors that they've signed for other books. There's a whole process of, okay, someone who signed with them 8 months before me, they're now due up with the printer. And it's just how it happens. You fall into the queue, and then when your number's called for the printer, that's how it's printed. And it takes a long time. The original publication date for this book was February next year, 2020. At some point in the process, they knew that we better get this out a little bit quicker. So that's why it was moved up to last week. So I was really hoping it could be out right before football season and kind of launch into NFL and college football. But you don't mess with the New York publishing house. They print when they print, and there's nothing you can do about it. And the fact that they moved it up almost 4 months was extraordinary. They rarely do that. So they knew the benefit of getting it out and to capitalizing on this mushrooming industry.
Rob, I got to ask you, one of the questions that I think a lot of authors get, I know, you know, all the friends of, mine, they write a great book and somebody says, when is the follow-up coming?
Yeah.
There are books now, you know, with the Bryce Harper situation that, hey, maybe a book number two in that series would be great. With sports betting exploding, I'd love to personally see a book that you write in 5 years about how different it is now 5 years down the road. Do you ever look at that as saying, maybe I could write a second book? Or do you say, okay, now I find my next project. My next project is going to be something totally different because I dove in so deep this time.
Yeah, you know, this one is pretty fresh, Tom. I'm pretty well acquainted with a lot of people in the business, and I'm thinking of a potential next book being having something to do with sports betting. I do have some ideas. I also have a great relationship with this publisher, Kensington in New York. They're happy with the way I've operated, and I'm real happy with certain things that they've done and how we've dealt with each other. That wasn't exactly the case the first time around with the Bryce Harper book. So you live and learn, and oh my God, I was a guppy dealing with them. They really, for instance, the first time around with the Harper book, it's not a sure thing that every hardback these days goes right to paperback. It has to meet certain standards, and it has to sell X amount. So I signed with St. Martin's for the Harper book, and it was a hardback. And then eventually, sooner or later, they announced that it's going to come out in paperback. Well, it went to paperback, but they decided to change the title. They changed it from The Last Natural to Phenom. And it's the paperback is different than the hardback because the paperback includes a chapter on his first season in pro ball. So the hardback came out, and then I was still writing as he was in the majors about that first season in the majors. And so that's why the paperback is different than the hardback, other than the title, because it includes that extra 10,000 words on his first season in the majors. But I bring that up because when they went to paperback, they completely changed the title, and they didn't give a damn what I thought. They just did it. I had signed with them. They had my name. They had given me the advance. So once you sign with them, you're theirs, and they do what they want. I'm pretty sure they didn't even ask my opinion. But that's a really strange thing to change the title from hardback to paperback. You can go on Amazon, and I think there's one or two reviewers for the paperback who they actually wrote, geez, I thought I was buying a whole different book. This is nothing but the Last Natural with another chapter. And that's what it is. It's just they think by buying something with another title on it, it's a completely different look, a completely different book, and it isn't. So that was pretty uncomfortable, and that's a reason why I tell you that I've really learned some hard lessons. So anybody out there who's writing a book, if you want to drop me an email, I can probably give you some pointers that'll save you a whole lot of headaches.
And you said that you were top 10 already, first week.
It was a number one new release for its up until today, yeah. And it really got a good jump. I've been promoting it. Other people have been really kind talking about it. Jake Cornegay has been writing about it on Twitter. A lot of other people have. So every little thing helps when you write a book. It just everything gives it a little push, and you never know where it's going to wind up. And so I can remove myself from the difficult process and kind of sit back and have fun with it. And it is pretty cool. It's a whole different thing. And Tom, I have a real good relationship, like I said, with this publisher. And we are already trying to discuss what to do next. So that's more than on the chalkboard for sure.
That sounds awesome.
So you told Tommy said that you have a story about Jay Cornegay, and I believe it's the same thing that you were saying before we went on air about how he kind of opened the doors for you on a college football Saturday, and you saw behind the scenes of that madness over at the Westgate.
Yeah, he let me behind the curtain. I'd been trying to get a hold of him. He's so busy with the explosion of legalized sports betting in the country. The Westgate is trying to get their name out there and trying to get into other properties on the other side of the Mississippi and try to get a piece of the pie, and that's all well and good. I mean, it's really a sprint for some action. And so I left him a text and, hey, whenever you have time, whenever it's good for you, Jay, I don't want to bother you. I don't want to bug you. And so I finally get the call from him to come down on a Saturday, exactly 1 year ago, on a Saturday afternoon. College football's going on, and I get there at 11. And I have a lot of questions for him, and I just thought, well, I don't want to pester him, but I really have a lot of questions. So once I start bugging him is when I'm going to exit. And he let me hang for about 3 hours. He has a great, he's got a not a big office, but a big U-shaped desk. And on opposite one of the legs of the U is 12 screens, and every game is going on. And at one point I told him, okay, how are you doing right here? Each game, how are you doing? Do you know what you're up? You know what you're down? And he pointed to the screens and said, went right across them. He goes, we're down, we're down, we're up, we're down, we're up, we're up. We need a touchdown here. We're up, we're down, went right across them. And you know, you've talked to him, Tim. He's such an easygoing guy. For such a stressful position, it was really smart of me. Well, I mean, lucky of me is what I mean. When I first moved here in October 02, I think it was probably that next Super Bowl where I went down to the Imperial Palace, met him, and did some Super Bowl stuff. And it just was really great to have that friendship with him for so long. Once I got this book contract, he was the first person I called from the other side of the counter to try to get in and see the other side of the curtain. And I tried going real deep with him. You know, I didn't want to bug him, but one question I was really curious about was the algorithms and the quants and the computers and how the machines are taking over. That's understandable when you're offering live wagering. And you need a program to just deliberate on what's the best price right now. Okay, in 10 seconds, what's the best price right now for to get action on both sides or to try to draw action? And the great question right now is actually, I think, an age-old question, man against machine. Do you rely on those computers or do you rely on your colleague who has been in the business for 30-plus years, who knows what's going on with, you know, the Clippers playing the Miami Heat right now, and the Clippers score 10 points to take a lead by 20 points, you know. There's gut reactions that people like Jimmy Vaccaro and Vinny Maliulo have seen and Jay Cornegay have seen. They can watch a game and they know gut reactions about how to react to something to put up the best number for the house. And sometimes that differentiates to the computer, and sometimes it differentiates a lot. And as a house, you can really get burned. The European books have really learned that with baseball, with Major League Baseball, they don't exactly have it factored in. Clayton Kershaw is starting, but last night the Dodgers bullpen just got racked. Six of them had to go in, and they all got beaten up, and there's literally no bullpen today for Clayton Kershaw. So how are you going to toy with those numbers? At one point, Kershaw can maybe go six. Do you start adjusting it and tweaking it? As a human, you got that gut reaction. You just watch that game. You know what's going to probably happen today. Computers don't have that feel, especially the European ones, and they get really burned by stuff like that. That's just one example that they need to come up to speed with. There's others, and then there's stuff that Americans can take the nod from for the European model. So it's a give and take. Everybody's watching everybody. The number is so homogenized right now with the computers. It's tough to find. You know, in the old school, Tom did this. You remember the four corners, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tom and his colleagues would go out to the strip and trop, and they would disperse into the four major casinos right there. This was maybe 20, 25 years ago, and they're putting the numbers up on chalk. They're coming back, meeting somewhere in the four corners, talking about who has the best number, how are we going to deliberate, and where are we going to put the money, and then they'd go back and make their hits. Those days are long gone, aren't they, Tom?
Running through the gerbil tunnels are no more, no.
Tom, you've been involved, though, greatly with, like Rob said, the explosion of sports gaming across the country. I mean, you made the first bet back east in, where was it?
Delaware,
right?
Yeah, I mean, literally beat the governor, the first bet in the history of this country outside of Las Vegas. And it was, I'm telling you, so surreal, Tim. Sitting there, I did an interview for the radio with the president right before, you know, within an hour before time, and the place was empty. And I said, aren't you pumped up for this? And it was in a racetrack in Delaware. And he said, no, not at all. Live on the air. He said, no, not at all. It's not worth the margins. I don't even know if I really want sports betting. I mean, I had no idea. I have been doing radio for 22 years. And that is, I've been, you know, hung up on. I've had, you know, threats on me, asking stupid questions and saying things. And let me tell you something. That was the first time I had nothing to say. I had never imagined that. I mean, in our world, because the biggest news in the history of the world, you know, man's walking on the moon in my world. And this guy says, the president says, yeah, I kind of don't even want it. It's surreal to think where it's come from. I talk to David Danzies once a month from the press of Atlantic City. And, you know, there's a legitimate battle now going on. And I don't want to hurt anyone's sensitive ears out there, but there's a battle going on now that Atlantic City is now or New Jersey is now the land and the place where of sports betting. It is the new capital of sports betting. And they want that title, and they're gunning for that title. And Vegas is battling back. And just to think, you know, 15, 16 months ago, that was unheard of. It was ridiculous. It was chuckled at and laughed at that Las Vegas would ever even lose the stranglehold. Well, they lost three straight months in a row coming into last month. It's amazing how the leaps and bounds, and you just think, use your imagination and just think how far we've come in what, 15, 16 months. Imagine where we'll be in another 15, 16 months. Well, how about 5 years from now?
Yeah.
Where are we going to be 5 years from now?
Well, now, Tom, you said something for the book that I think the audience will find really interesting. I'm going to botch the country. I'm certain I am. But you told me a great anecdote about a house in Jersey that is getting their number not only offshore but from Bulgaria. Was that what you told me? What was the country, the odd country?
Oh, they flat out. Yeah, they flat out to get their numbers from offshore. And they have no problem telling us that. I mean, the first day I was interviewing them, absolutely no problem. Now, I will tell you, I can absolutely spill the beans. It was the original Resorts Sportsbook. Mm-hmm. Now they've sold that, and it's now a DraftKings in there. But it was the old Resorts Sportsbook. And I came in, and I said, where are you guys getting your odds? You know? With no problem. Like he was just telling me where the bathroom was. It was absolutely crazy. My face dropped. He saw my face drop, and I tried to kind of keep it cool, and I'm going, man, this is why I'm on radio, so people don't see me face to face.
Just a flat-out admission that they're not concocting the numbers in-house. That's just bizarre.
No, and it was a crazy notion that I would think that they were.
Right.
You know? Tom, do you see soft lines out there, or is it pretty stead on with everybody else?
Oh, the lines are beautiful, Tim. What has happened, and Rob can attest to this, what has happened is this, is around the country, not in Las Vegas, around the country, the business model that the DraftKings and FanDuel have come up with, and now PointsBet USA and a couple of other ones, Sugar House and whatnot, because it's such a battleground in New Jersey, you have 5, 6, 7 mobile sites going at it, they don't care about the high-level player. They don't care. They're all about new client acquisition. They just want new people to come in. Every business model that they have is new client acquisition. They just want to get people in the door. So, Tim, I will get Boost on my phone, Mobile Boost. Bet today and get ABC. I think I told Rob about one of them before the season. Bet today, who will have more touchdowns? Odell Beckham or Saquon Barkley? Saquon Barkley plus 120. What? You know, you see ridiculous things. If the Yankees and Mets win today, 10-1 odds. Meanwhile, both of them are favorites. I mean, they do things like that.
Wow.
It's new client acquisitions. They're going to, mobile-wise, it's a lot easier to just cap people out. But I will tell you the best story is I took a shot on the Super Bowl. The first time I wasn't sitting next to you, Tim, right? One time I missed Vegas because of my son being born. Other than that, I've been sitting next to you for 10 years pretty much during the Super Bowl. I wanted to go to Atlantic City for the first time. And Atlantic City is a walking city. You know, you can walk the boardwalk and hit casino, casino, casino. I was taking a shot at Tom Brady to win the MVP. Listen, I figured if New England's going to win the MVP, I'm going to throw money on Jared Goff. I'm going to throw money on Tom Brady. But it really wouldn't make sense if they were both minus 110 or so. So I walked into the Wild West Casino, and Tom Brady to win the MVP was plus 130. All right, no problem. I walked down the strip a little while, and I went into resorts. Tom Brady to win the MVP plus 150. At Ocean's Casino, it was minus 130. So on the within a 20-minute walk, I could have gotten plus 150. I could have gotten minus 130. I'm friends with two sports handicappers. I made the first legalized sports bet after after Will Chamberlain in Atlantic City. And I met two pretty good sports handicappers. They want to be, you know, left underground, but they post stuff on Twitter all the time. And one of the things that they post consistently is free money. And when I tell you free money, let me tell you what this is. Future bet free money. Oregon over 8 wins. Oregon under 10 wins. Right? It's just middling opportunities where you're going, what are they doing? And there's a lot of that going on, Tim. Because, again, it's all a matter of get the new talent acquisitions. Those new customers, they don't really care about the other customers because once you start betting big money, you start winning, they'll cut your account anyway. They just want the new customers, so they go crazy with soft line.
Yep.
It's time to take our top of the hour timeout. Rob Misch joining us, author of Sports Betting for Winners, Tips and Tales from the New World of Sports Betting, available at Amazon.com and locally here at Borders Books. When we come back, guys, you up for some college basketball talk, Rob?
That's all I've been doing the past 9 days. Yeah, I just started a column for Gaming Today on college hoops. It's called The Gym Rat, and so I've been knee-deep in college hoops. I'm ready.
Tom, you ready?
My college basketball futures were posted yesterday, so I am absolutely ready.
All right, on the other side of the timeout, college basketball preview, the season underway this week. I'll make Rob and Tom give me their national champion when we come back. It's Heatwave Sports, Super Sunday Night, Fox Sports Radio.